Good morning and welcome to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. It's a weekly program about health, nutrition, fitness, and all things lifestyle, including arts and culture. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Graham Anthony. This morning, for our monthly segment on the connection of arts and culture to our mountain lifestyle, we will focus on arts and cultural districts. We'll be joined by Hadley Dynack of the Park City Summit County Arts Center, Arts Council. Let me get that out. The Park City Summit County Arts Council, and Jake McIntyre, who has worked on the development of Ogden's Creative District and Cultural Master Plan.
Then we'll be joined by Channing Ulch, affectionately known as Mrs. Leitch by her students. She's a local, and she has now published a children's book. Her new book is called The Boy in Glasses. It's in part inspired by her son and in part by her students. It's about the gift of being who you are, no matter what you look like or no matter who you are. It's about empathy and kindness. And it's also about a book hunt coming up on August 26th in the Old Town area. This is The Mountain Life. Stay with us. We'll be back after these words from our underwriters.
Come together.
Together to support public radio. I'm KPCW News Director and host of the local news hour, Leslie Thatcher. Our news department works hard to bring you news and information you need to know from Park City, Summit, and Wasatch counties. Now, more than ever, good journalism is needed to help us come together. Our pledge drive is August 21st through the 24th. Please show your support for local news.
Matt here from San Francisco Design, supporting our local radio station, KPCW. Since 1990, San Francisco Design offers interior design and a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings with store locations in Salt Lake City and Park City on Bonanza Drive. On the web at sanfrandesign.com, San Francisco Design, love your home.
This is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with my co-host, Graham Anthony. Jake McIntyre is the Project ABC project manager and the founder of Union Creative Agency. It's a collaborative design firm in Ogden that has been instrumental in developing Ogden's creative district and cultural master plan. He joins us in the studio along with Hadley Dynack. She's the executive director of the Park City Summit County Arts Council. When a community decides to dedicate an area to become a dedicated art and culture district, what exactly does that mean? And how does it get decided on in terms of what is art and what is culture that might be included in this district? Hadley and Jake, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Great to have you. So ABC, Project ABC, Jake, why don't we start with you? What is that?
So Project ABC is kind of a high-level countywide look at arts and culture. The tagline that we're using is building a roadmap for the future of arts and culture. It could be thought of as kind of an arts and culture master plan, countywide, big grand collaboration between government entities, nonprofits, artists, businesses, and us.
Great. So I remember about, well, it was over a year ago that Randy Barton showed up at a city council meeting and he said, hey, wait a minute. Art and culture is as important in this community as skiing and mountain biking and or something like that. I'm paraphrasing. And so out of that, I believe, and maybe Hadley, you can kind of go back over the history, but this desire for creating this overarching art and culture master plan was born.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think Randy and a number of other cultural leaders came together to advocate on behalf of the future of arts and culture in our community. You know, there's no doubt, there's no question that we have incredible arts and culture assets, largely born from the passion and vision of these nonprofit leaders. And we've made a lot of intentional and significant investments in other community priorities like open space and recreation. So the question was on the table is, what can we do as a community to make further investments to ensure the long-term sustainability and vitality of our arts and culture sector? And importantly, how does arts and culture connect to and serve as a bridge to our other community priorities? So it's not necessarily a standalone thing, but how does it relate to things like affordable housing and transportation and sustainability and our open space and recreation assets? How do they all link together and form a bridge? So this group, as advocates, asked the city and the county to participate on a steering committee comprised of other stakeholder groups, as Jake mentioned, from the nonprofit community, the business community, the philanthropy community, the artist community. And they all agreed that now is the time. It's been a number of years since we've done any cultural planning, so now is the time to do a countywide look at what we love and what the needs, wants, opportunities, and visions are for the future. So that's what Project ABC is.
And so are you looking at the planning of facilities and development? Are you looking at the planning of activities and the types of activities that are brought to this town?
Yeah, great question. So Project ABC is a very broad look, as Jake said, and it has kind of three phases that are overlapping. One is data collection, the second is convenings, and the third is documentation. So we're kind of in the summer of data collection right now. We've been having many conversations with people in the community, doing interviews. There's a survey live right now on the Project ABC website, which we will take the opportunity to pitch to everyone listening. Please go on projectabcsc.com and take about 10 minutes and share, you know, what you love and your ideas for the future. And I think it's all of what you said. So it's looking at what are the facilities, the infrastructure assets that we have now, and where do we see opportunities for growth, partnership, and collaboration.
And how do you define culture?
So I think, you know, that's one of the trickiest parts of the definition. I think as hard as art is to define, culture can become even more difficult. But we're looking very broadly at both of those definitions of arts and culture and thinking about not just traditional senses of what those words mean, but expanding into things like creative entrepreneurship and history and kind of local community priorities and gatherings, anything that brings people together in a way around celebration or around the communication of human identity, I think is important to this conversation.
The communication of human identity. That's a good one, Jake. Well, let's launch into this because I think that people in general, it's a very generalized, the Project ABC, as you say, it's high level, it's broader, it's bigger, it's maybe a little more philosophical. But last month, when the city announced that they would be purchasing just over five acres in Bonanza Park for what's called a dedicated art and culture district, I think a lot of people said, what is that? And how do you decide what goes into that? So first of all, Hadley, if you can make the distinction between the larger project and then what the big questions that people have about what the city is going to do.
Yeah, well, I think that the city's intentional investment in a defined space for two of our core cultural institutions, the Kimball Arts Center and the Sundance Institute, as well as our other arts and culture programming, is incredible. And exactly what we're talking about when we look at what does the future hold for our community and how can we really embed arts and culture more deeper into kind of our understanding and awareness of who we are. This project, ABC, is countywide, so we're not just looking at Park City. We're looking at the Basin. We're looking at North Summit. We're looking at South Summit and really trying to map all of those areas and what they're doing and what their interests are, which are very unique because we have a very diverse community and county with lots of different people that are expressing arts and culture in different ways. So I think that the city is going to be embarking on their own master planning process for that district. I know that they're going to be issuing an RFP to a consultant to look at, how to plan that district, what the infrastructure is going to look like. And I think there are lots of opportunities while ABC is distinct and separate from the planning of that district. for our effort to inform some of the thinking of the city as it's planning the future there in Bonanza Park, and likewise what they collect and what they're thinking about for that particular parcel of land can inform countywide what other parts of our plan are.
So I'm sure I've been in towns and cities that have a dedicated art and culture district. However, I probably haven't been cognizant of that when I've been there. So describe, well, either one of you, I'm looking at Jake, though, because this is sort of what you do. Describe a few other towns or cities that have this dedicated district, and what does that look like? Give us some examples in case we might want to visit those to see what's in store, perhaps, for Park City.
Yeah, so a couple, I mean, first off, these exist nationwide and globally. If we stick to the United States, though, some of the ones that have stood out to me most in my research over the years are the Rhino District in Denver. Is an excellent one. One that I'm going to be visiting next week is the River Arts District in Asheville, North Carolina. We've got Portland is an interesting place in that it has a multitude of different arts and culture districts that some are formally defined and some that aren't, but they're kind of spread out as a network across the city, so a little bit different than other places have. And then locally within Utah, as you mentioned, I've been working with the city of Ogden to develop a creative district there. South Salt Lake is working on developing stuff there. And then a little pocket development of Regent Street around the Eccles Theater in Salt Lake City is kind of not formally designated as an arts and culture district, but is a pretty good example of some of the elements that are included. And that's kind of one of the newest developments that have come online in our neck of the woods.
And how many of these places, large cities and small, were originally developed organically? And how many of them were actually designed in with a professional organization and a dedicated staff?
So I certainly don't have numbers on it. I would say it's a mix, but the majority leans to organic development as far as I've seen. And I think what's happening here is a little bit different in that it's an intentional plan from the beginning, right? We have an area that's not necessarily an arts and culture district now, but we want to turn it into one. And this is something that places like South Salt Lake and Ogden are looking at in terms of the way they develop it as well. So it's not completely unique, but it's not the standard model either. The standard model is more of artists move into an area because it's an affordable place, often an industrial place. It's born out of necessity and then grows organically. And there's some kind of unintended consequences that come out of that, typically leading to displacement of artists and arts organizations over the long term. And then that cycle kind of continues. Intentional planning gives us an opportunity to do something a little bit different.
Again and again, you see communities where, as you say, artists move into a neighborhood because it is affordable. They elevate the standards and quality of life in that area, attract more people. Prices go up, artists can't afford to be there anymore.
Yeah. Well, and I would add, one of the things that I think is important is that arts and culture districts, by definition, are unique, and they represent the needs of an individual community. So what we're going to be doing with Bonanza Park in Park City is different than what might be happening in South Salt Lake or in downtown Salt Lake with the Cultural Core. And I think that that's a key part of the definition of a cultural district, is that it, by definition, is unique to a place and the needs of that place.
So interesting that in Park City limits, anyway, we are so restricted in terms of, you know, what can be built and how it can be developed. But I think of, as you talked about, Jake, an arts district developing organically, and I think about, and as you talked about, out of necessity, I think about that street, and I can never remember what it's called. It's in Salt Lake where it started. That it was in an industrial area downtown, and artists grabbed these little spots where they could work and have their studio downstairs and perhaps live upstairs. What is that place I'm talking about? Do you know?
Yeah, you're probably referring to like the art space development that happened in the area that's now the Gateway, and
right,
that general area of,
yes,
kind of western downtown.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, what do you come up against in allowing that creativity or that imagination for a space to crop up organically when you're in a situation where it's being I don't want to use the word contrived because that's a little bit negative connotation, but you know what I'm getting at?
Well, I would just jump in and say that, you know, one of the inherent challenges of arts and culture in Park City proper is how expensive it is to live here and to work here and to do business here. And so the advantage of what we're talking about with Bonanza Park is looking at, are there opportunities in that space or with Project ABC countywide where we can as a community support developments where artists can come and live and work and show their products or their artwork, where they can come together and learn from each other and network and display or perform, you know, whatever the art is. And I think the other piece of this is the creative enterprise element. So it's not just the production of artwork per se, but also the production of creative goods. And we have a huge creative economy, like many other places in the country, that's developing in Park City. So where are there opportunities to support the development of those businesses or those enterprises? And because it's so expensive in Park City, the design of these areas, I think, is a really important intentional effort that we can make as a community.
Do they often involve smaller spaces? And is this something, you know, a smaller footprint, a smaller, and I think of a business that has developed in sort of an organic way here on Main Street. As we know, rents are so expensive on Main Street, square footage wise. Prospect, the store that has the barbershop in the back, and upstairs is Pink Elephant Coffee. So three small businesses within a very small footprint, which is, I think it's cause for celebration that they've been able to do that, and it makes it all it makes it feasible for every business. So, you know, I guess my question is, you know, is this something that you see in terms of square footage, smaller spaces?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the key elements, I mean, as we said, arts and culture districts can't, I think, plainly be defined, but through my research and the, you know, National Endowment for the Arts and American for the Arts, there's, you know, some characteristics that you can at least define. And one of those that I put in the mix is diversity, and not necessarily meaning demographic diversity, but largely meaning diversity of programming and space. And by space, you could look at, you know, a large 30,000 square foot facility, but you can also look at kind of micro studios and micro retail at the tune of, you know, 50 or 100 square feet. And we've seen through examples like you just mentioned that that's entirely possible, and that it's a desirable model for incubating creative businesses and creative entrepreneurs. And so I think In a way, it would be a little bit crazy not to consider the diversity of scale when we think about building facilities here.
And so you would encourage arts that include both moose and bear. I'm just kidding,
and all of
course,
the above. Yeah.
But how do we go down this path without becoming almost a cliche of culture and be saddled with Cocapellis or howling wolves, as we see in the Southeast?
Yeah, I think there's a few kind of important elements that play into it. But one of the things that's come up through our Project ABC effort, not to kind of mix these, you know, more than they're already getting mixed, but is that authenticity is becoming incredibly important. As we think about the future of arts and culture countywide, the concept of authenticity has come up again and again. And I think one of the ways that you ensure the inclusion of authentic development and authentic cultural identity is by including real local people in that process. That the only way to really do that is to not just paint your own picture and develop from it, but to include as many stakeholders from a diversity of ranges as possible and let them have a seat at the table, let them voice their opinion, and then really listen and develop from that point of authenticity. I think that's kind of the only way to be able to do it.
Is there a nexus in this that ends up promoting public art in a town this size, where we do have quite a bit of public art, and that requires some support from government?
Yeah, I think public art is an important element for sure. in all development, both the city and the county, as you likely know, have a percent for art percent for art policy. That means that 1% of any capital development that either the city or the county does in an appropriate space will go toward the production and installation of public art in that place, if it's an appropriate place. So with development comes opportunity for public art. I think that both the city and the county's public art boards are also looking at other ways outside of an installation in a given space, which is part of their core mandate and how they spend their money, how public art can intersect and provide a context for this community engagement that we're talking about in a space. So maybe that is a piece of art, or maybe that is an experience, a temporary installation, if you will, or some kind of other experience where people can come together. I think one example would be the View From My Door project that the Summit County Public Art Board just completed, where that was a two-month installation of photography that was submitted by Summit County residents on the theme of what it means to live in Summit County. And then those posters, those large format posters, were put in 14 commercial buildings around the county. And then people would take this 60-mile tour. So public art as a short-term installation to create some form of movement across the community in places where maybe people wouldn't typically go is another example and form of how public art can develop.
Great. You talked about the Rhino District in Denver, the River Arts District in North Carolina. Which town was that in?
Asheville.
In Asheville. And some different districts in Portland, as well as Regent Street in Salt Lake, where the Eccles Theater is now based. And I'm wondering about a couple things that you have seen or haven't seen there. And one is the extent of a subsidy by a local government. I mean, are taxpayers going to have to, in essence, pay for this art and culture district? Do we have to subsidize it to make it work?
So I think that's a complicated answer because everywhere is different. Asheville, for instance, where I haven't visited this arts district, but I'll be there next week to check out what's going on. That developed organically, and from what I've been told, is kind of in a state of being kind of losing its heartbeat, or there's some displacement happening there. Even though it's still thriving, there's some sort of loss. Portland is somewhere that developed very organically. So from those examples, those have not, as far as I know, received kind of an intentional investment from government. And I think in some ways, because of that, they're changing, right? And not always changing from the good. Colorado has an initiative to financially support arts and culture districts and the development of them. And I think that's an important element, largely because it's statewide and it's not just about any individual community, but it's about the connection of arts districts between communities.
Okay. We're speaking with Jake McIntyre. He's the project manager for Project ABC here in Summit County. It's the Art and Culture Master Plan. We're also speaking with Hadley Dynack, the executive director of the Park City Summit County Arts Council. So another question I have along these lines, and as you know, there are several small businesses in the Bonanza Park area right now that people are concerned about being displaced. One of those is Anaya's Market. It's a Hispanic or Mexican food market. We have a somewhere in between 20 and 25% of our population is Latino and loves that market. It's a very successful market. I guess this is a question about culture. And then another business there is Soul Poles, which is arts, it's recreation, it's sort of a mix of everything we do here. And first of all, with a business like Anaya's, is that something that fits in? It's obviously culture. It is a showpiece of our cultural diversity here in Park City. How does a business like that stay?
So I can't speak to the specific situation here just because I don't know enough and it's so early in the process. But conceptually speaking, One thing that's really important is that we continue to have this broad definition of arts and culture, and that we remember something that I always think about is that an arts and culture district is a concentration of arts and culture, not the concentration of arts and culture. And so just because we have this new boundary set, there are certain things that can and should happen within that, but it doesn't exclude the connection to those to similar things externally. And that also, just because it's an arts and culture boundary, that not everything that exists within there has to be arts and culture by definition, that it does need to still feel like a walkable, real neighborhood, right? And so you don't want to move everything in terms of facilities and resources out that don't have to do with arts and culture. You want to be able to create a complete neighborhood, which does include things like local markets and local entrepreneurs and production space. Again, I can't speak specifically to here, but conceptually speaking, I would say an arts and culture district should include those other elements.
So no fences.
Yeah, no fences. I think one of the things as I listed out what I would define as characteristics of arts and culture, the biggest one that I added that I haven't seen added to anybody else's list is connectivity to the outside. I think that if you close boundaries and say this is the arts and culture district and this is where arts and culture lives, then you're doing it wrong. You need to very intentionally plan from the beginning to build bridges between other arts organizations, other arts districts. And I don't even just mean that within the city or within the county. That's, you know, statewide, that's regionally, that's nationally. Arts and culture districts should be gathering places that connect to the outside. It's not about a kind of closed-minded look at here's where arts and culture lives and it doesn't live anywhere else. I think that's a really important element.
Yeah, and I would add to echo that, you know, specifically here in Park City and countywide, you know, we have existing places where arts and culture activity happen. I mean, historic Main Street is an obvious one with all of the galleries, with the Egyptian Theater, you know, with plans for developing a park at the top of Main Street that will be a gathering place. You know, that's where our Kimball Art Festival is, and, you know, discussions that it's not going to be moving from that Main Street area. You know, there are clearly other places, the Eccles Theater being another, you know, Mountain Town Music Programs, music, you know, in little pocket parks all over the county, which is incredible. So, as Jake was saying, you know, the opportunity to provide a sense of connection or a bridge between all of these centers of arts and culture in our community is critical and exciting.
Do you think we end up with a battle for the heart and geographic center then if we create a separate district?
I don't think you do, as long as you intentionally plan to avoid that, if that makes sense. So if you plan to sort of steal the heart of arts and culture and place it in one spot, then maybe you can do that, though I would argue you still probably can't. But if you very intentionally from the beginning set out to build this kind of network of arts and culture, then I think it's absolutely possible. Every little pocket of arts and culture has a unique identity, unique organizations, unique artists, and the connection between those is what becomes really interesting. So again, I would say this arts and culture district that's on the table at Bonanza Park is an arts and culture district, not the arts and culture district.
And that's why you're here.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, we feel immersed in all of these things here most of the time. And I find this community is rich with arts, culture, music, activities galore, and the allowing it to flow here seems critical, that there be open channels and that artists be able to go where they please to pursue their craft and their passions.
It's funny, I was speaking with a gallery manager on Main Street here just last week and talking about the proposed art and dedicated arts and culture district. And she said, I'm not worried. It's sort of the same that you said, Jake. You know, we have wonderful galleries on Main Street. We will continue to have these galleries on Main Street with a combination of, you know, theater and all kinds of culture. And we'll have that district over there, and it'll be a wonderful complement and several places for people to visit as town evolves. So what's next for Project ABC? And again, could you please tell us how to find that survey? Because I'm sad to admit, I didn't know about it.
No problem. So the survey is live at projectabcsc for summitcounty.com. And you'll see it's first thing on the homepage. There's a big header that says Love Arts and Culture and a button that says Take Our Survey. So if you click through to that, that'll takes about 10, 15 minutes. And it's a great platform to share your ideas of arts and culture in general and countywide. Next on the table, we're kind of moving into the latter part of our data collection. So we're doing interviews with stakeholders all over the county. The survey will still be live for the next little bit. We are holding work group meetings with artists and business and nonprofit organizations over the next couple of months. It's a busy time of pulling together all of the ideas, and then we'll start culling into that and figuring out what the big ideas are that we want to pull out.
All right.
Yeah, and I'll just close by saying that later this fall, we're looking at early November, we'll be doing a large community convening where we'll be bringing together everybody that's touched the project so far and inviting the general public to come in to do kind of a day-long 4 or 5 hour workshop to share back the findings that we've heard, validate those, set some priorities, and move into action.
Excellent. Hadley Dynack is the executive director of the Park City Summit County Arts Council. She's here with Jake McIntyre. He's the project manager for Project ABC, and in this case, SC for Summit County. Thank you so much for joining us today on
Thanks,
The Mountain
Lynn.
Life.
Thank you.
We'll see you next month.
Sounds good.
Stay with us. We'll be back to talk about a new book, a children's book, and a book hunt, the first of its kind here in Park City, taking place August 26th. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Monica Van Hartesveld, branch manager of U.S. Bank in Park City, a proud sponsor of KPCW. We are available for consumer and commercial banking needs, including both mortgages and lines of credit. U.S. Bank is located on the corner of Park Avenue and Deer Valley Drive. usbank.com or 647-3726.
Hi, this is Whitney Wall from Park City Mountain and proud supporter of KPCW. This summer, Park City Mountain offers a variety of events for the whole family, including the annual July 4th celebration and fireworks, summer concert series, and weekly Wednesday Farmers Market. The full calendar of Park City Mountain events is available at parkcitymountain.com.
Valley Behavioral Health is a local nonprofit and proud supporter of KPCW. We are your community behavioral health center and provide a broad range of services, including individual, family, couples, and group therapy for mental health and substance abuse. We serve all ages in all of Summit County. Please check out our website at valleycares.com or 649-8347 for more information.
This is Dr. Phil Davidson of Davidson Orthopedics, Park City resident and KPCW fan. Our practice offers solutions for knee and shoulder problems to enjoy the active Park City lifestyle. More information is available on our website at davidsonorthopedics.com.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Graham Anthony. Interesting conversation about the Arts and Culture District, or an Arts and Culture District, and lots more conversations on that soon to follow.
Let's call it an Arts and Culture County.
Yes, that's right.
We're very fortunate.
And we're going to move into more arts and culture. You know, wouldn't the world be boring if we were all the same? Wouldn't it be empty? And wouldn't it leave us completely out of the realm of learning about understanding and compassion and acceptance? Especially with recent events in the news in the last week, we can't help but think that teaching our children that our differences are kind of what makes us all humans here on this earth. This is one of the reasons that we've invited local children's book author Channing Ulch, better known to her students, perhaps, as Mrs. Leach, to talk about, or Ms. Leach, I should say, to talk about her new book called The Boy in Glasses and about the wonderful world of learning these lessons as a young person. She'll also tell us about a Park City book hunt coming up on August 26th. Channing, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So I just love that, your website is called theboyinglasses.com.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So I was looking over that and reading your book this morning and thinking about just how wonderful it is to teach all of us, and it's not just children, but as I was reading your book, it's like, wouldn't it be great if we could all see the good in everyone?
Right. And this book was, so there's no character, there's no name in name of any character in the book, because I want every reader to be able to say, oh, I think that's me, or I think that's my friend, or I think that's happening to me. Which then presents a conversation for parents to kind of glimpse into their perspective and how they can help or where they can change it. And it was written because I wanted to teach my son how to see the, how to choose to see the better side of people, which I think is a really hard lesson as a kid. And it's something you kind of constantly practice as an adult. So it is really about the whole experience, and it is really about everybody. And it is really for everybody. The kids in the book are inspired by students that I did teach, and they were either the kids that had so many mature qualities that I ended up looking up to them more than half the time, or the kids that took that a little extra emotional effort that just doubted themselves way too many times. And I wanted an avenue to tell them someone knew that they were great, and now I'm going to tell everybody else how great they are.
Mm. So it's really, to explain it in a brief way, it's about this little boy who, before he puts on glasses, he sees the world and these people at school, these kids at school in this way. And then he puts on the glasses and he sees things in a more clear view about who they really may be. And it makes us stop and think about those judgments that we make about people, the snap judgments.
Right.
And then if we look a little closer, we can see something else.
Right. And when emotions are high in the school year, snap judgments are easy to make, and they're quick. And sometimes they're really hard to escape once you've made them. So this was really about when I did have those emotional moments with students, this was really the conversation I wanted to have with them of, hey, let's choose to look at it from a different perspective. How can we do that? And that's not really something you can do in 5 minutes. You know, you need longer. You need the whole day. And you also need it to be an ongoing conversation at school, at home, with peers. So this was kind of my attempt at bridging that gap.
Channing, you had some very specific inspiration for writing the book. Is that right?
Yes.
Want to tell us about that?
My son needed glasses at 3 months old, and I quickly went to his school experience, and I compared it to what I thought it would be and to what it may be now. And I didn't like what I thought about. And I quickly thought about all the other students that I taught, like I've said, that just kind of struggled to get through the day. And I didn't want that. I didn't want that for them, and I didn't want that for my son. So this was my small chance to kind of change that without over-parenting, I guess.
Well, at 3 months, I imagine you're reading it to him.
It's a little bit old for him, but he does play with the book a lot.
But he's not reading it himself yet.
He's not quite. Okay. You know, maybe tomorrow.
Is this something that, upon inspiration, you sat down and wrote or dwelled upon for months and months?
I think I told my husband, who I'm lucky enough to have a husband who did not laugh at me when I said, hey, I think I'm going to write a book. I told my husband I would write it, and I think I wrote it in 3 days. And I had it illustrated in the next month or two. And then since then, it's just trying to been developing a copy that I like to see and I'm proud to give out.
That's fantastic. And it's a beautiful book.
Thank you.
Can you tell us about your collaboration with the local artist, Corey Flickinger?
Yes. I found him online, lucky enough, and I was really happy to be able to meet with him in person. And we spoke for about an hour, and then it came to be. We worked together via email mostly. And he was done very quickly. He was able to squeeze it in before a big project.
Well, he's also very talented. And
thank
I
you.
Can speak from experience because I get inundated with proposals from artists from around the world.
Great.
And his work is beautiful. And well done for your book.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that.
So as serendipity or synchronicity would have it, I stumbled upon your personal Facebook page a day before I got the email from you telling us about your book hunt and your book. And I was impressed. Well, first of all, I saw this darling little baby with these glasses. And it led me to think, and then there are photos all over with him, and he's just so cute. And it made me wonder about how you know that your three-month-old is having difficulty seeing. How did that pop into your awareness?
It was really by coincidence. My father-in-law, Brad, he kind of convinced us to make the appointment. We made the appointment. I went in totally dismissive about it. And I said, I don't really need to be here. I'm just here to double check. I have very bad eyes myself. And throughout the appointment, they dilated his eyes and they just measured the angle of the light in the retina. Throughout the appointment, he was saying numbers that he says in my appointments. And I was like, this can't be the same thing. It's got to be different language because it's a kid and a baby. And the doctor turned to me and he said, I bet I can guess your prescription. And he did. And I was like, why can you guess that? And he said, well, he's got your eyes. Wow. And I just broke down.
Yeah, absolutely. Those things we give our kids that are great and those things that we never want our kids
right.
to have.
Yeah.
But how did Brad know? Was it something about the way that his eyes looked? Or how do you know when a baby can't?
I mean, honestly, you couldn't. Even the doctor said there's nothing he could have seen to indicate that this would have been it.
He has a sixth sense.
He just got lucky. Yeah, I think he has a sixth sense. Got to be it.
That's great. And then, so for a little baby who has glasses, well, and how old is he now?
He's a year.
A year.
Yeah.
So he's so used to them, and I suppose now he wants to always have them off. And I think about babies with sunglasses, how they knock them off because it's something bothersome.
Right.
But if you know he has this awareness that he can see better. Or I don't know.
He doesn't seem to. Sometimes he does, sometimes he doesn't. He just recently figured out how to take them off. So that's his new trick. He takes them off and hands them to you. And, you know,
he thinks
he's sharing. Yeah. But for a while he was okay with them. So it goes in phases.
Yes.
Yeah.
I like what you said a bit ago about trying to teach your kids the lessons about having... that they're going to run up against these things that are difficult, and it may have something to do with who they are, their physical appearance, and how to teach them that resilience or grit, as they're calling it these days.
Yeah.
And not overparenting.
Right.
And this is something you no doubt learned as a teacher. Can you talk about that?
I think the biggest takeaway from that experience as a teacher was I wanted the student that was struggling to be able to step into the other student's shoes, because usually that would also indicate that they are also struggling. And then right there, you have a common ground. But I also wanted to always tell the student that was struggling that because they are struggling in this very moment, they're much stronger than they realize. And if I could just shift their focus from this kind of hurt feeling moment to, wait, but I'm awesome at the same time, then I would have considered it a successful day. And that's more what I wanted to do with my son, and that's what I wanted to do with my son and the experiences he'll have with other kids, whether they be difficult or wonderful. Just to always think about not just the strength in other people, whether it be negative or positive, but the strength within yourself based on how you react to those things.
Yeah.
So you have an interesting book promotion coming up.
Yes. So the book is based on all experiences that I've had with real live students that touched me in just the deepest way. And I wanted to make the launch of the book an experience as well. So I'm doing a book hunt where readers who register on my website, theboyinglasses.com, will be sent on a scavenger hunt throughout Main Street. Clues will be at each location. And at each location, there will be a certain amount of books that will be published just for them. So the reader will not find just a copy of my book. They will find their copy of my book. And it will be addressed to them. There will be a letter inside for them. And if they find their book at that location, they come back to the last location, which I'm not going to reveal yet. They'll come back to the last location and meet me and the boy in glasses, and we'll chat about the clues that they could solve and the clues that they couldn't and all that sort of stuff.
That's certainly unique. And are you hoping to attract kids of all ages and their families too?
I am. I've got readers that are in seventh grade so far registered, but I've also got readers that are toddlers who are my son's best friends. So it is for all ages. The book is geared for readers grades 1 through 5. But I hate to put a limit on it because it is also a conversational piece for adults as well. So even though it's a picture book, I don't like putting the age limit on it.
Mm. And you are selling it.
I am selling it. If you don't want to participate in the book hunt, you can still meet me at Dolly's bookstore at 3 o'clock. And I will be there with the boy in glasses to sign copies and sell copies on August 26th. It will also be available on my website and possibly on Instagram if I can figure that out.
It's all a new world,
yeah,
isn't it, when
yeah.
you become a children's book author. So I just glanced at the list of places. We have the Park City Library, Fly Boutique, Rooted, and help me out with the others.
Habit and Atticus.
Okay.
And of course, Dolly's. Dolly's is where it will start.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. That's where it will start. We don't know where it will end.
You can figure that out, but for the young readers, that will be a clue that they have to solve.
Yeah. I'm wondering, you know, we do so much when we raise our kids about, you know, teaching them about, you know, right and wrong, but a lot of times we focus on being a good student, and I just think, you know, you have a one-year-old, my kid's average age is 20. And, you know, just the other day I had this epiphany, I think, about parenting, and it's the most important job we do. And we take so much pride in it. And I certainly have. And I thought, oh, you know, I've taught them so much about getting good grades and, you know, getting into a good school and getting a good job. And what about that human aspect? What about being a good human? And we think that they get that through just absorbing the world around them and little things that we tell them. But do you feel like that's a central component that we're missing out on as a teacher? Do you see that?
So the one thing I loved to teach was emotional intelligence. And I developed this like 16-week game type program to help raise awareness of that, self-awareness and communication and community awareness of it. And it was the most, classroom altering moment I've ever had every time we played. It was a 15-minute game, but I always found 15 minutes out of every subject to take and teach the kids about each other more than I did about subjects. And that was meaningful in every single classroom I did. I really feel like it's a subject that should be taught in school and valued just as much as reading and math and anything else. And I do feel like the reading element, there's so much to it. That's why I think I was inspired to do the book hunt, because you can bring a lot of subjects into it with just a small reading activity and a lot of heart.
Yeah. You taught at Wileman, you taught at Roland Hall.
Yes.
And you taught sort of the lower grades, fifth grade and younger.
Right. Second, third, and fifth.
Second, third, and fifth. What great ages.
Yeah.
So much discovery.
Yes, so much
in
fun.
In those ages. And now you've taken a break to raise your son,
yeah,
and to write this series. You say it's a series, but this is the first book. So where is it going?
So the second, third, I think it can go up to, I've got about 7 ideas. Right now, I think I have about 5 solid written ideas. It will take on the perspective of different characters within this book. So the next book will be about a character you meet in this book, and it will have some of all the same characters. The boy in glasses will obviously be in every single book. I also have a challenge that if a reader cannot find themselves in this book, they can enter a character submission into me, and I will include that character in my next book. So I want the whole book, I want the whole series to be an experience and a relationship with the reader. I don't want it to be this one time, open the book, close the book. I want it to be a relationship.
Mm. Have you thought about publishing it also in Spanish?
Yes, I have. I talked to the Spanish teacher at Roland Hall. She has run out of time to do it, but yes, that is on her list to help me translate it.
That's great.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful idea.
Yeah.
Well, the book hunt coming up August 26th, and you register by going to theboyinglasses.com. And easy to register?
Very easy to register. There's two buttons on the homepage. Click one, takes 2 seconds, free.
And everybody walks with a book?
And everybody walks out with a book. Wow. The book is $17.99 no matter what location you buy it at.
Great. Tell us just about one of your favorite characters and how the first judgment, shall we say, before the glasses and then after the glasses, of how it evolves or morphs that one person.
Right. So my two favorite characters would be, they're all my favorite, but I think the best transition, the best transformations are the boy in spikes and the girl in pink. The girl in pink seems bossy and loud and kind of rude. He puts on the glasses and it sort of brings on this new light. You kind of listen to the words she says, and she's the friend everybody needs. She's the one that's giving you praise. She's the one that's loving on your greatness and just the one that's got your back, and she's loud about it. And those are some of the best kind of people to have around, even though sometimes they're misunderstood.
Yeah. And the boy with the spiky hair looked like a tough when he
right.
was fuzzy, but in clear focus,
yes.
he was actually a helpful
the
young
toughest
man.
Guys sometimes have the softest hearts, and those, that's hard to see when you're young.
They're such simple lessons that we're still learning as adults. You
yes.
know, when you start, for example, a new job, and, you know, everyone in your workplace, you're sort of going through and assessing them, essentially judging
right.
them. And how often are we, you know, we wrong about that for the first months that we work in the job? And then finally
right.
you discover this hidden side that you didn't know was there because either you weren't able to bring it out or,
yeah.
you know, it just takes time.
And it's a choice. It's an active choice to sometimes see the better side of people when it's not obvious.
It is an active choice.
And to seek out and find the commonalities.
Yeah, and you most likely always have something in common with the person you're struggling with.
Yeah.
You know?
That's so true.
Yeah. Yep.
It's that mirror.
Yeah.
All right. Channing Ulch, Park City resident, now children's book author. It's August 26th, theboyinglasses.com. Thank you so much for joining us
today.
Thank
you for having me.
Great to have you. And we'll be right back after these words.
This is Nanette Bush with Fairway Independent Mortgage, supporter and longtime listener of KPCW. Fairway Independent Mortgage offers personal home, vacation home, and investment property lending. Our mortgage team partners with local realtors to provide our clients with resources to understand the home finance process, located at 1700 Park Avenue or at nanettebush.com.
Spend the day outdoors at Utah Olympic Park and save when you buy a Gold Pass. Valid for day use of the zip lines, alpine slide, extreme tubing, and much more. Add a Comet bobsled ride for the adventure of a lifetime. Activities are open daily from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Details available at UtahOlympicLegacy.org.
Utah Olympic Park is a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing winter sport and recreation opportunities and a KPCW supporter.
Want to thank our guest today, Channing Ulch, along with the arts and culture folks, Jake McIntyre and Hadley Dynack. Want to also thank our underwriters of this show, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Design, Davidson Orthopedics, Park City Mountain, Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, Zions Bank, Fairway Independent Mortgage, and Valley Behavioral Health. You've been listening to KPCW Park City. Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life.
Support of KPCW comes from Zions Bank International Banking and Foreign Exchange Services. Zions Bank. We haven't forgotten who keeps us in business. More information available online at zionsbank.com. Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air Cruise and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com, Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com, Fred Marshall Painting, painting Park City's home since 1974, fredmarshallpainting.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Stay tuned now for National Public Radio News from Washington. You're listening to KPCW Park City, and don't forget the KPCW Party! on Friday from 5 to 9 at the Town Lift Plaza.